Oh, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition. I am chatting with John Kaiser, founder of Kaiser Research. And John, I first just want to get your opinion on where the gold market stands as we are now in 2019 and arguably still on at least a little bit of an uptrend. However, gold is pretty much stopped out right below 1300. It can't quite break that level. And of course, we're all looking then at the about 1360 to 1370 level for a true breakout. How do you see the setup for the precious metals in 2019 playing out?
I think in 2019, we're going to see the audience for gold broaden beyond the traditional base of gold bugs, who typically are more of a right-wing nature. They're not particularly keen about gold right now, because to start saying you need to buy gold, everything's falling apart, is to implicitly give a thumbs down to their hero, the President of the United States. And so the whole enthusiasm at these conferences and that, it is somewhat muted. But on the other hand, I was kind of excited last week when I saw this video interview of some billionaire hedge fund manager called Sam Zell, who was saying that he's bought gold for the first time ever. And I kind of shrugged and, okay, it's a big deal. But then at the conference in Vancouver, I was speaking to a traditional gold bug, and I mentioned this, and this gold bug dismissively said, "Oh, he's a liberal." And the light went off in my head, and I said, wow, it's happening. Gold is becoming a protest channel for all these frustrated liberals in America who can do absolutely nothing about the direction that the Republican administration is taking the country, with the shutdown, with the foreign policy. And so I'm expecting that gradually, as the year goes by, gold, which has been forsaken by the gold bugs, and they maybe piled into Bitcoin and stuff like that and got their heads handed to them in that black hole, I think we're going to see a much broader audience. And the trigger will be some geopolitical crisis. I'm watching very closely what's going on in the Ukraine, that the Russians grabbed those three Ukrainian ships in the Sea of Azov. And that's actually a big deal, but nobody wants to talk about it. And then there was some Russian official mouthing off about how the Ukraine is not going to be a state for very long, and the Ukraine has really annoyed Russia by allowing its Orthodox Church to split off from the main one that's Russian. So if Putin, while America's dealing with its shutdown and obsession with the wall and all these other things, decides to invade the Ukraine, what is America going to do? And the same thing with China. I mean, Trump and Xi Jinping are trying to resolve this trade war, but there's really no way that this can have a happy ending, because the United States wants nothing less than China to stand down from its ambition of being at least an equal rival to the United States on the global stage, and perhaps even to exceed the United States and domination. So this is also as unsolvable a problem as this wall shutdown domestically. And if China's own internal problems with its economy slowing, hurt by the trade war, that's if it goes to a 20% tariff in the next couple of months, it'll make it even worse. China has internal problems. So one way you deal with that is to create a distraction. And this Taiwan issue has really bugged China forever. And if they decide enough is enough and decide you are part of China, stop pretending that you're not, we're basically annexing you, again, what is the United States going to do about it? Reinstate the draft and start sending soldiers over there to beat back the Chinese from Taiwan? Both these types of areas, these areas in the world, the potential flashpoints that can unmask the United States as really not being able to make much difference. And if something like this starts to happen, and all the United States can do is, oh, we're going to do sanctions against you. People can say it's falling apart. Humpty Dumpty has fallen off the wall and we can't put it together again. And then there's going to be, I think, a rush into gold as everybody realizes we have no idea how this is going to play out. And so I think because nothing's going to change in the United States for the next 2 years, we have a two-year window where gold is going to start going up. And it's not like the U.S. dollar is going to go down because all the other currencies you don't want to own either. So gold is sort of the one asset class which you can take home and hide and sit on. You can't do that with bitcoins or in cryptocurrency because those float around in cyberspace. So I'm optimistic that this threshold that it needs to go through, you know, last beyond 1400. Once it does that, it will keep going and you will see new audiences. The majority of Americans who do not support, who did not vote for the current president, they are all potential buyers of gold. And of course, they're not going to be that interested in the juniors. But when you start seeing a real price increase in gold, a sustained increase across all currencies, that's where the bar for what counts as a gold discovery starts to be lowered and all the optionality ounces in the ground also start kicking in. I think this year we're actually in a turning point. The 7-year bear market that's now in its 8th, it's going to turn out that this is the beginning of a 7-year feast.
All right, John, so you outlined there a lot of geopolitical issues, which in all fairness can be very, very difficult to time for the market and sometimes can be very short-lived. However, some of these geopolitical issues do creep into the financial system. Just look at what these trade wars have done and, quite frankly, struggling economies around the world. But as you said, the juniors really need some sort of a boost from the metals price to get more people interested. Right now, it's a very select market for which juniors are running. That's what you focus on, though, on your website. Before we get into which juniors are good, what have you seen as driving the price of juniors higher? It seems right now to be a lot of true exploration drilling and nothing else.
Well, a new intersection with high grade. High grade is the magic phrase. You know, a big long intersection, you know, 300 meters of, 0.3% copper and 0.1 gram per ton gold. Nobody cares about that. What they're looking for is flash. Anytime you get very high grade copper gold values or gold silver values, the market pays attention. You know, we saw last year Royal Nickel take off. They got a little bit of a bump a couple days ago when they reported more of this 1,000 gram per ton intersection. Another little junior called Amex, which has a skinny vein, came up with very high gold grades over, you know, short intervals. And of course, you know, we saw Sun Metals last year with the intersection of copper and gold that was double and thicker than anything that had been previously intersected, that saved that season for them after having spent about $5-6 million over the past year and a half, and now they're fully financed to go back in. And the one that I've been watching most closely is West Haven Ventures, which in the British Columbia's Spence's Bridge Belt, which is this 100-kilometer-long belt of volcanic rocks, which have always been seen as having potential for low sulfidation epithermal systems. Various juniors have explored it since 2000, but nobody has ever really come up with anything to get truly excited about. And last year, West Haven itself, which picked up the claims various projects in that belt in 2011 and has been plodding along at sort of 10 cents plus or minus five or six cents during this whole time with small programs, finally locked into a very high grade gold silver vein. And this took the stock from 10 cents to $1.30. It got smacked on Monday, and then on Tuesday when the Americans came back from their holiday after they put out results not quite as flashy as before. But this type of discovery in an area where potential has always been seen but never validate it, and suddenly you start coming up with something. This is what, in this market, I'm looking for, these new discovery stories that can create big wins. I mean, sure, we have 1,000% already, but if you stack another 1,000% on a story like that, that's a 100 bagger. And that's what this market really wants to see, is something coming out of nowhere, toiling away and delivering a monster gain. That will bring back the audience into this junior space.
Yeah, it really will. We need some exciting story. And a couple of years ago, we thought that was Novo. I still think that Novo is set up pretty well this year because they seem to have a better understanding of their project. But if West Haven can keep maybe drilling some positive holes, the problem is, though, just this week, West Haven came out with some follow-up drill results at the Shovel Nose property, and the stock took a bit of a hit. They just weren't quite as good as those first results. What was your assessment of what the second round of drilling showed here?
Well, there were two disappointments. There was the one you already mentioned, which was, we don't have these 300 gram per ton gold, 10 ounce per ton intervals anymore. We have more reasonable stuff like 15 to 30 gram, which is like $600 to $1,300 rock, which is really, really good, and it's over mineable width. So not getting more of the same. It's a similar thing that happened with Great Bear also. It had the big flash right away, raised the $10 million, and then they put out more stuff that wasn't quite as flashy, and the market did not like that. But the other reason the market was set back is in December, the company has had a parade of analysts from brokerage firms and producers signing confidentiality agreements, going to the site, walking the core, thinking about it with their low sulfidation epithermal experts in tow. And while the stock was parked there in that $1 to $1.30 range, so, well, why don't you guys do a $5 million plus financing? Make sure you get this done. But precisely because all these potential parties were under a CA, they couldn't really do anything because there was two levels of knowledge. So when the news came out, it suddenly opens it up for these parties to do a financing because everything is now on the table. But one of the things that troubled me is that the 100-meter step out to the southeast, which is a pretty aggressive step out for a vein discovery, it came up with a considerably lower grade, the kind of stuff that you normally have been getting in Spence's Bridge. But what I think caught the market by surprise was that they said, we believe this is the root of the system. Now, that's not good news because they intersected this root about 230 meters beneath the surface. And these low sulfidation epithermal systems have a vertical range of, maximum 600, 800 meters. It's where sort of the boiling zone intersects with the water table, and that's where all the gold and silver likes to drop out in the fractures and faults. To say, obviously it's been uplifted a mere 100 meters to the southeast, that means it's gone. It's been eroded away. And so the hope that they would just start boom, 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 doing 100-meter step-outs like something like that Kupol vein in Russia, on which Peter Fischel, their VP of exploration, is an expert on, that hope instantly vanished immediately. And we said, there's much greater complexity. And the company is saying, well, yes, it may be uplifted there, but topographically it starts to rise not too much farther to the southeast of this. And it's all overburden covered, so nobody's ever had a chance to see what the bedrock looks like. And they're optimistic it's some sort of local horst block that has been uplifted there, and maybe that area eroded away, but the vein system will still be intact when you go beyond that. And they are now doing IP surveys. They've discovered that the veins there in that main area do show up as resistivity highs quite clearly. And since they're now looking through cover, overburden, by doing IP surveys, they hope to be able to pick up the vein. Now, they're not going to be aggressive and step to the southeast until May. Right now, they're starting a modest program of five folds or so, a couple thousand meters. They have about $800,000 to $1 million in the treasury still. They're going to go into the main area, hole 14, and follow up these parallel vein that they have there. And that was the good surprise that came out with the follow-up drill program last in November, December, was that as they pushed through the main vein, they intersected a similar vein with also high grade values, not as high as they got in the sweet spot of the first vein, but they believe that by stepping over and targeting primarily this other vein and getting it higher up at the sort of what they're calling the 1200 meter elevation, which seems to be the sweet spot for the bonanza zones to occur, they're going to be drilling a few holes in there to see if this super high grade shows up in the parallel vein. And of course, from where they'll be setting up, they'll be able to drill and see if there are additional parallel veins, so that we end up perhaps not like a cupel system where you have one giant vein ripping through the countryside. You get back to the other model that they were chasing, which is the Ishikari model, where there's a whole swarm of veins, all of them very high grade. So the story is still wide open. It's a huge change from what's always been known about the Spences bridge belt, but the hope for instant full-scale gratification has been suspended for now. And that is actually good, because when you have something like Aurelian, and these guys think this could end up being a Fruta del Norte type system, which is why Sable Resources has staked all this available ground within the Spences belt, that story never really gave the retail sector the boost, because it went from 60 cents to $40 pre-split so fast that nobody really had a chance to jump into this. So a setback like this, showing it's not going to be easy, where you go to full valuation very rapidly. This is good, because now with the stock here in the 70, 80 cent range, it's very interesting for people to come in. Hopefully they nail down a financing, preferably without warrants here, showing that there's some serious long-term players. And then this thing, as it gets going through the rest of the year, and this is key, they got to get a financing, because with all this stuff we talked about earlier about the global situation, we're still in danger of a serious equity market meltdown. And should that happen, there will be no funding available for juniors. So juniors need to move quickly when the window for financing opens, so that they can carry on for the rest of the year pursuing their project. And hopefully West Haven does pull that off. Gren Thomas, of course, was the founder of Aber and involved with the discovery of Diavik, well-connected. Hopefully they can pull this off in the next few weeks.
I am hoping for that as well, John, just mostly from the fact that it could help draw some more interest into the sector. But what you said there, I think, is very important as well. If we go through a major market correction, there isn't going to be funding for these companies. So let's see what kind of financing they can get done, because, well, even right now, it's still tough to get a significant amount of money in the door. Hey, John, I appreciate you breaking down this project, this company, and also your general thoughts on the market. Everybody, thanks for tuning in to the first hour. I'm going to turn it over to the second hour to Big Al. If you want to get in touch with me, please email me at fleck@kereport.com. Thanks for your time, John.
You're welcome, Corey.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.